רציתי לחדד את הדברים because we have a commitment, we have a sitting this afternoon. I can't afford to sit here the whole month. And welcome. May I take this opportunity to welcome National Treasury and to our members. I know we don't have a quorum. However, this is the beginning of our work in terms of looking at the Section 32 report. It's a pity that many members are not here, but I'm sure they will join us as we continue with the meeting. The National Treasury will make a presentation. We will raise questions, so that all members know, understand the process. We're supposed to, after the presentation, identify those departments that we think that we need to invite for hearings. For now, it's difficult to say which one needs to be invited, because certain questions that we may raise with National Treasury may be best responded to by the departments themselves, because they are the ones who spend, they are the ones who are supposed to plan and everything. But I hope that the members have gone through the, I mean, received the copy of the quarterly report and have been able to go through it. Maybe this time I should allow National Treasury to present.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for inviting us this morning. I will quickly go through the agenda, and then part of that agenda is introductions. This morning, we designed this presentation to sort of meet a number of objectives this morning. Most notably, we want to talk a little bit about, in my introductory remarks, improving monitoring and reporting reports that will especially be focused on the work of Parliament, improving the formats and the content of the report that we presented to you that the members received last week. We realize there are still opportunities for improvement in the way information is communicated in those reports, and we want to invite the committee's recommendations on that. We have our own ideas as well, and I'll talk through a little bit of that. I'm going to also give an overview of consolidated spending for FY 2008-09. It's really a high-level overview, because what we want to do is talk about two particular sectors today, and focus on spending efficiency and spending pressures. All the functions and sectors of government really have their role to play in the priorities of government. There's not any one sector you can choose over another and say, well, one sector doesn't necessarily contribute to the priorities of government. So the way we selected these was based on visible availability of officials of National Treasury, but we want to make sure that we talk about some of the areas where spending pressures and efficiency are an issue, although it's also quite common in the other sectors. The other issue that we have is we want to have a discussion with the committee about the sort of, to use the cliche, big picture issues that relate to sectoral and functional responsibilities of government. We've given you a detailed report on over underspending by program, by department, and we hope that the members found that useful. But we're going to, in the second part of the discussion this morning, talk about the sort of bigger issues that affect how money is spent and the pressures for increased spending in education sector and in urban development and infrastructure services. There's the protection, justice and protection services, that is another sector that we're not going to touch on in detail today. There's health and social development sector that we're not going to touch on today in detail. What other sectors do we have that were? Administrative services, the presidency, parliament, home affairs, because those are another three clusters within the National Treasury that we will obviously touch on in a consolidated overview, but the time doesn't allow for us to get through the spending pressure, spending efficiency issues across all sectors in one sitting. So we've picked two to focus on today, and in these quarterly briefings it might be useful each time to focus on these sectoral issues as we go along. But we will.
Sorry, I would like to just to interrupt this.
Okay.
You know, the problem that I have, Mr. Clinton, with that is that maybe we didn't communicate properly in terms of what are our expectations. You know, because I mean, if we knew that you can only give us this much information and not today. I mean, we can't get the whole thing that we want today. I don't think that is the understanding of members, that they will only get part of the information. I don't think that is their part. Because now, if we had the same understanding, we could schedule this meeting to go over a number of days so that we get then this information that you're referring to. We have scheduled this meeting to take place today, so that Treasury gives us everything that you're supposed to give us, so that what could be left to us, but what is left to us is that now is holding hearings with those departments that are not spending. And some of the departments that you have mentioned already, I'm sure the members have interest. I do have myself in interest of raising questions to those departments, but we're not going to get input in this morning. Maybe we need to improve communication, you know, so that as well myself I can be able to upfront to say to members, look, our input this morning will be limited on these matters, because so that we don't have high expectations on things that we're not going to hear a report on. Honourable sir.
I agree with you 100%. Our problem is that, you know, after this presentation, this committee is supposed to be able to decide which departments they want to invite to come and report to us on the problem areas, and we can't if we deal only with one or two departments this morning. We can ask those if there are highlight problems or problems highlighted by Treasury in those specific departments. But for the rest, we'll need a presentation by Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. If then we do not get, If then we do not get the information we are expecting today, by when and how soon would we get the rest so that we are able to interrogate and hear what the departments are saying for themselves?
Tatarab, you wanted to say something?
No, Chairman.
If you could switch off your.
Okay. Sorry.
Mr. Connor, you wanted to another Connor?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Listen, I just want to know, what are the time pressures? If they do not do this presentation, when do they need to do it to, fulfill their obligations?
The other matter, on the matters that you have raised, that you already indicated that you would like to discuss with us, are really the issues of timelines as far as these reports are concerned. I know that you got the numbers as early as last month, if I'm correct, that the report took a bit of time. But I think that all of us, maybe we're trying to be lenient or too lenient, and that leniency can cost someone else, because the Public Finance Management Act has got time frame. Certain things have to be done at a particular time. And now, I don't think that all of us need to have one understanding. If there's a delay, I think that we need to be informed as to why there's a delay, who is delaying the whole process. But so that we can't just wait. Parliament expects us as well to report at certain times. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I quickly to respond, did not want to create the impression that we're only covering a handful of departments. The sectors that we're covering will cover in the detailed section of the discussion, probably 12 or 13 departments, and in the consolidated overview we're going to cover, of course, over-underspending in certain other departments, and of course there's the detailed report that covers every department that we're not going to necessarily go into detail on, but it's going to still be quite an extensive presentation that I hope will at least satisfy part of your needs this morning. And part of the discussion this morning is to discuss with the committee and get your recommendations on how best to structure these interactions. If it takes a number of days, then that is what it takes, and then we schedule it, and then everybody knows in advance. When you see the presentations that Julia and Mahesh are going to give, you'll see that the issues are not things that you can necessarily gloss over in 30 minutes. For 12 departments in a cluster, that some of these things need more time, and that's why we've decided to focus on two particular sectors this morning. But we look forward to your recommendations, certainly, on that discussion.
I'm hoping that members are taking note of that. It's a very important discussion that we'll need to take here.
In terms of recommendations, introductions, there are the three officials here this morning, myself from the Public Finance Division, Robert Clifton as Project Coordinator with the Technical Assistance Unit, assisting the Public Finance Division in these interactions with Parliament, improving in-year reporting, and I'm going to be starting the first part of this presentation. Mahesh Fakir, the Chief Director for Urban Development and Infrastructure Services, will be covering that part of the presentation, and Julia DeBrun, Chief Director of Education-Related Services, will be talking about education and labour and social arts and culture and sports and recreation and a number of departments in that sector. We want to inform the committee on the current and planned improvements to in-year reports and programme budgeting. And again, seek the recommendations of the committee on structuring these interactions. We're also going to cover fourth quarter 2008-09 consolidated spending, that is the totals overall, as well as selected departmental program over and under spending, and then the sector-specific discussions that I've alluded to earlier, where we'll focus on efficiency, spending efficiency, and spending pressures that the committee can take up further with the departments and entities. In terms of improving monitoring and reporting, we've got this in-year report now that we've developed over the last year or so with the committee that no longer is functioning, the Joint Budget Committee. We worked extensively with the members and the staff on that committee to produce a more detailed report than what was previously available in the Section 32 report, which is published monthly and gazetted, but one of the issues there was that it only goes down to the vote level, and we realized in discussions with the committee that in order for the committee to do its job more effectively, that they needed more detailed and better information. So we developed this format of that's aligned to the appropriations bill structure that the committee got last week, and we've also included explanations of over-underspending by program and economic classification categories. These are brief explanations, but these are explanations we have to follow up with quite often with departments, because obviously we're aware of large issues, but not necessarily issues in every program. And so when our the accounting system reflects over underspending, we follow up with departments, get an explanation of the cause of the spending deviation, and have put that as well in a supplemental report to the committee. So those are the improvements we've made to the committee's information that we're able to feed in, but we have other planned improvements. We're going to, for one thing, make sure that the report is much more closely tied to what's in the appropriations bill. Right now, you'll find we've, I think, identified only those items that are specifically and exclusively appropriated in the appropriations bill. But there are, if you look at the appropriations bill, a whole host of different allocations made through the appropriations bill in each under each program that are not covered because they were not specific and exclusive. However, we feel like that those are still important, especially the transfers to public entities, and we're going to be including those in the next iteration of this report, which will be the first quarter of 2009-10, and that making sure that all of those items are reflected so that the committee can follow through on monies that are not necessarily expended at national level but are transferred to provinces and to public entities more thoroughly. I just wanted to, I know this is a small print report. This is and I wanted to show this though because this is the detail. I've got the appropriations bill here, and it's something that, you know, that is the beginning of the process. The E&E elaborates further on this, and then there's the adjustments budget, which comes in October. But there's a lot of detailed transfers, conditional grants, earmarked expenditure items that are broken out in the appropriations bill that are relevant and useful probably to this committee, and that we'll be including in the report in the first quarter. Another project that we're moving on is an internal project that we want to involve the committee in, related to improving the functionality of program budgeting. As you know, the budget is structured along the basis of programs and activities and projects, but we feel like those have evolved over time. They haven't. The program structures of votes, which are supposed to be linked to strategic goals and mandates and main divisions of a department, have not evolved over time. Organizational structures have evolved over time, and now we find that in some departments, the program structure of the budget doesn't talk directly to the objectives, to the mandates of departments, doesn't talk directly to the national priorities of government, and we're going to go through a review jointly with the departments to review their vote structure over the next year and a half. It's a long process because we've got about 30 votes to get through. In some cases, we'll just be confirming the existing structure, where that structure meets what we set out in our guidelines as the sort of best practices for program budgeting. Program budgeting is an interesting concept in that it's used the world over, but it's very hard to find guidelines, to find the sort of secret to good program budgeting. It's internationally accepted as a good way of structuring budgets so that we get away from line item and cost categories and focus more on what the money is being used for and what it's aiming to achieve. However, if you survey other budget offices around the world and you bring in experts, you end up finding that everybody has taken program budgeting and adapted it to their own needs, which is probably appropriate. And so we're actually working on drafting a program budgeting guideline so that it's not just that what the Treasury says, but it's something that we can use as a reference in our work with departments as we review these program structures. So the aim is to improve the management, accountability, and monitoring of spending and service delivery. The management item is really an internal item. How do departments use programs to manage their expenditures better? Accountability is obviously more of an oversight function, and monitoring will be jointly improved between what the Treasury does, what the Presidency does, what Parliament does. If we are able to look at a budget and tell from that budget how the money is being spent and how this is linked to national priorities, I think it will assist us all in monitoring spending efficiency and service delivery. Again, the focus will be on linking these to strategic goals, mandated functions, and main divisions. Maybe those three concepts convey the complexity of a review like this, because sometimes your goals might not be linked to your mandated functions, because if you've got, and that has been an issue where you'll find departmental program structures are linked to goals which are not necessarily tied to the legislation of what a department is meant to achieve, or where the functions are diminished in relation to strategic goals. There is a balance to be struck with program budgeting in that it needs to be strategic, but at the same time it also needs to cater to the mandate, to the functions, to the core responsibilities of a department. And just because a department has new priorities or strategies doesn't mean that they are that they should diminish or ignore their core functions of service delivery. And so there's a balance there between catering to the strategy but also catering to what needs to get done. The review will take account of objectives and activities per program, the use of performance indicators and targets to provide a richer base of information for what is being actually accomplished in terms of outputs and even outcomes, developing a better way of budgeting for projects. These are non-recurrent expenditures, to make sure that these don't get merged into the baseline, that we budget for something that lasts 2 or 3 years and then the monies are no longer budgeted on an ongoing basis. This can occur if you're not managing those projects carefully and you don't have a system in the budget structure to account for projects. Again, those are the non-recurrent type programs that are temporary in nature. The role of the program manager is something that we're also focusing on. That's sort of an internal management issue, but empowering the program manager is something that we're going to be looking at. It might require an amendment to the PFMA in that a lot of authority is vested now with the accounting officer of the department, but the role of the program manager in taking ownership of the program, being responsible for the expenditures and being responsible for what's supposed to be achieved, is also an important concept in program budgeting that we haven't emphasized enough. And obviously the core responsibility of the accounting officer are still critical, and so there's a balance there to be struck. Also, with regard to entity oversight, entities are funded through individual programs, and we want to make sure that we build in a structure that makes that provides for accountability in the way that those transfers are overseen and managed. So that's an ongoing project. And the expected outputs are to confirm or revise budget program structures for each vote based on vote-specific recommendations that will be made relating to the vote structure in the appropriations bill. These recommendations will be communicated in brief report to the Minister's Committee on the Budget, but at the same time we are going to be consulting with the Presidency and the relevant parliamentary committees. And again, we want to invite the inputs of this committee to how best to involve the committee in these decisions about program structures, because again, it's going to determine the structure of how the money is actually allocated in a department. And there's many, many facets to that. We're developing a guideline. We've got it in draft format. We can share with the committee at this point. That's being tested with four departments to see if it's applicable and understandable. It's actually quite conceptual at this point. We envision having a much shorter document. It's probably 50 pages at the moment. That really is much shorter in nature and will assist us in going through this review. But, for example, you know, it'll talk about the benefits of large programs versus smaller programs. Smaller programs are easier for oversight authorities to analyze. You can understand the key objective of a program. Now, larger programs, sometimes you'll have interrelated objectives, harder to sometimes scrutinize and get under the skin of. And so there's a balance there between large programs and small programs, and the guideline will address some of those issues. finally, and it's just reiterating points I've already made, we want to have the committee consider and give us recommendations on structuring both these briefings and also our interactions regarding the review of program budget structure changes. And we'll look forward to that discussion after this briefing. In terms of consolidated spending overview, we've pointed out that our report structure that we produced originally for the JBC has evolved and been improving. And what does it tell you? It gives you pointers to assessing national departmental performance. But we use the word pointers advisedly because it's just at this point information on spending per program. In some cases, those programs are well designed to accommodate the true mandates and objectives of the department. In some cases, they obscure that. So it's got its limitations. What doesn't the report tell you? Well, it's not going to tell you necessarily a whole lot about spending efficiency. If you find in a program, many departments have spent up to 100% of their budget, what does that tell you? They've got clean audits. It still doesn't tell you if they've achieved what they set out to achieve, their value for money question. And it's, the lack of comprehensive performance indicators is one reason why it's difficult to get one's arms around spending efficiency. But even with extensive performance indicators, to understand value for money in a particular sector, in a particular department with specific issues and objectives, understanding value for money is still largely about evaluation as well as routine monitoring. So you can have all the performance indicators you want. You've got to balance that against the cost of collecting that information, the cost of verifying that information. There are a lot of pitfalls when it comes to performance indicators. They are necessary. They are useful. They're included in the E&E. The minister responsible for monitoring and evaluation administration is working aggressively in this area. The Treasury continues to work in this area to improve the non-financial information in budgets. But even with all of that, they're not a silver bullet. They could even be misleading if they're not structured correctly, if the information isn't of the highest quality that it needs to be. So it's a statistic, and if you speak to stats, they can tell you about how statistics work. Statistics have their own issues, and so it's just something to be aware of when thinking about value for money and thinking performance indicators. They are valuable, but they also need to be reviewed with an understanding that they can obscure as much as they reveal, just like any statistic. The report also doesn't give the detail below the program level, such as sub-program, activity, project level detail. That is detail that in most cases needs to come from the department. These are below the program level. The department's largely responsible for the allocations. They're responsible for the program allocations as well. But at least at the program level, there's oversight. There's a Treasury discussion through the medium-term expenditure committee on allocations in the program, on performance in the program. There's certainly a lot of input in Parliament, but it doesn't go into all the levels of detail. And if it did, it would be a 200-page report, and it would be very difficult to understand and consume in any case. So, again, we balance level of detail with our need to know more and more. Just in terms of the performance indicators, I've mentioned this already, that when reviewing an indicator, these are obvious things, but when you really get into the detail of indicators, these things become quite important. Is the data reliable? Is it clear what's being measured? You might think the indicator is measuring one thing when it's actually measuring something else, because you have to interrogate the definition of the indicator. Is it verified and accurate? And the Auditor General plays a significant role in that, but they can't verify everything. So is the data coming from a source that you can trust? And I'm talking about the internal input sources in the department. Is it cost effective? Collecting data that needs to come at the classroom level from every teacher. One needs to understand it's important. We need to know how many hours a teacher is in a classroom. We need to know how many children showed up that day. That information is critical. It's so critical that we take 15 minutes out of a teacher's day to fill in that information, because there's no computer sitting in the corner where they tap in like you will, where you scan into Parliament or to any office building in the country with your tag. It says, okay, the teacher's arrived. We don't have those systems, so it's paper-based. Teacher's got to fill out a form, got to sign a register. Somebody's got to add all that up. It's all in pen and paper. So when we're wanting to know information, we need to always consider the cost. And it's not just the financial cost. It's the resource cost of a teacher's time, of a nurse's time, of a doctor's time, of a prison guard's time. And then you've got to wonder about the accuracy of that information once you've gone through those manual processes. Does it cause unintended consequences? We have the example of the matric pass rate that was emphasized by our previous Minister of Education. Matric pass rate went up, but access to matric went down because they were filtering students who had students who might not have might not pass the matric exams, weren't given the matric exam. So we actually affected equity and access at the same time of pushing up an important indicator like the matric pass rate. So we've got to consider these things when we're thinking about performance indicators. So we're working on that score aggressively, but we are aware of some of those issues and concerns, and just wanted to highlight them for the committee this morning as well. The report is also going to be limited in terms of what it tells you about service delivery. Because service delivery takes place quite often at provincial level, or service delivery is provided by public entities who receive funds through fiscal transfers and grants from national government. Now, provincial spending is monitored closely, but it's still up to the provincial treasuries and the legislatures to write and pass those budgets. The Treasury publishes a quarterly report on spending in the provinces, because that information is fed up to us from the departments through the provincial treasuries. It's fed to the National Treasury, and we publish in Gazette a report that comes to Parliament on a quarterly basis that looks at spending in each of the sectors by province, looks at conditional grant spending. So we do monitor it, and that is a report that especially the NCOP gets to interrogate a lot more. But it's a report we've briefed the Joint Budget Committee on previously, and might be something that this committee also wants to have access to. And it is accessible because it's a public document. In terms of public entities, the PFMA doesn't cover them in the same way as it covers national provincial departments. There are over 300 entities. They're not on the basic accounting system. They're largely autonomous from the Public Service Act. They even use a different accrual, a different accounting system, which is accruals, whereas the government is on the rest of the government is on a cash-based accounting system. They also don't use program-based budgeting. Now, they do have their own accountability systems, such as shareholder compacts, corporate plans that have to be tabled, have to go to the executive authority, which is the minister. There are board performance agreements. So public entities are something that need to be monitored more closely, but they are treated differently. And so, again, in this report, you'll find the transfer to the entity, but you won't necessarily see, well, you won't see what the entity did with that money in terms of their performance contracts, in terms of their performance indicators, in terms of what they meant to achieve and what they achieved. There's a slew of reports, annual reports. They're audited by the Auditor General. Again, they submit all these documents, but they're not treated the same way as departments. So it's a challenge for all of us to stay on top of these different types of public entities. Finally, I'm just going to cover consolidated spending for FY 08-09. In total, 637.4 billion Rand was budgeted. That's based on the adjustments budget number. Of that, 370 million Rand was appropriated. That means it went to departments. Billion, 370 billion Rand was appropriated. That went to departments, conditional grants, subsidies. Broken down even further, of that 370 billion, 101 was for current payments, 10 billion for capital assets, 258 billion for transfers. You can see of the 370, most of it was for transfers. And you can see very little is in fact for capital assets, because again, national government departments are not delivering capital assets in most cases. Those capital assets in many cases are perhaps new prisons for the direct service delivery departments, but in also other cases it's catering to government accommodations. 267 billion. Of that, 637 billion is for direct charges. So the direct charges, and you can find that in the report, mostly accounted for by the equitable share transfer, which goes out of the National Treasury's budget. About 85% of it is for equitable share. So national departments are directly responsible. If you look at the 637 billion, national department budgets are directly responsible, give or take, for 121 billion rands worth of spending. Between the transfers, between the equitable share, most of that goes to other entities. Of course, there's a large amount, almost 80 billion rand, that's transferred to households through social grants. In terms of national department spending, again, we're 99.82% of appropriate and direct charge funds were expended or transferred. That includes 100.3% of current payments, 99.5% of transfers were made duly and according to the appropriation. Of that 10 billion rand, only 93.5% was expended, so there's they're probably the most significant deviation from budget. And more than 100% of the direct charges were expended. And that we're getting to, I think that's primarily because of increases in salaries that caused some of those direct charges for judges and for other elected officials to be slightly above the planned budgeted amount of 100%. Finally, I'm going to talk through some departments who had some significant underspending. I think in one case I'm going to talk a little bit about overspending. These are over and above the departments that Mahesh and Julia are going to cover. Foreign Affairs has spent 97.86% of its budget, mainly due to delays in the construction of the Pan-African Parliament. Home Affairs spent 96.88% of its budget, which again is less than many departments were able to achieve. However, I wanted to point out that this is up from 92% from the previous year. This is mainly the underspending of 3.12% is mainly due to delays in the rollout of the smart ID card and advanced passenger rollout processing system. Public Works, a department that also battles to spend its full appropriation each year for the same reasons. Slow delivery of infrastructure projects and vacancies. Health, mostly the underspending in health was due to monies withheld in hospital revitalization program because of slow delivery in the provinces. Just wanted to point out that nurses' OSD salary adjustments did cause overspending in the provinces, even though that's not reflected in this particular report. That would be reflected in provincial spending reports. Labor spent 94% of its budget, and Julia will go into a lot more detail on labor departments. I'm not going to cover that. She can talk about one of the areas that they struggle with, which is the labor inspections unit and vacancies in that area. Correctional services is one of the few departments that significantly overspent, and apparently due to overtime payments made to compensate for the non-implementation of a correctional office occupation-specific dispensation. Agriculture underspent by or spent 96.9% of its budget due to 60 million rand not being transferred to the DBSA for the Lima Letsama food production projects. Housing spent 99.93% of its budget, Again, I wanted to point out that's up from 95.6% last year. So the trend is better. Again, what about the backlogs? What about the value for money? Those are questions that we have to take forward. Just because they spend 99.93% of their budget in any department doesn't mean that they're necessarily achieving all their objectives. However, we need to understand that we have to recognize improvement where it occurs, and I think housing has done better in the last year. The last department that I'll cover is the Department of Water Affairs, which spent 92.82% of its budget. This is mainly due to shortfall in Program 2, which is a water resources program catering for large construction projects, in particular the De Hoop Dam project. Parts of the project, including bulk distribution of raw water from the dam, construction of water treatment works, bulk distribution of potable water, and reticulation of potable water for consumers, were stalled by approximately 15 months due to delays associated with environmental improvements and compliance with environmental conditions. The department also progressed slower than expected with relevant feasibility studies, and there was also a delay in the minister providing directives to the Trans-Caledonian Tunnel Authority to execute some of its necessary responsibilities related to the construction of these projects. I'm going to hand over now to Julia to talk through a little bit about some of the sector-specific focus areas in education-related services.
I wonder, Chair, if we can ask questions about this general presentation now before we get to the specifics, because what I would like to know, doesn't relate specifically to the departments which these gentlemen are going to handle, or the lady and the gentleman. And the first question I want to ask is, there's a large proportion of our budget that goes to local authorities for, municipal infrastructure grants, that kind of thing, but there's no control over it. In other words, we don't ever see as an appropriations committee, whether those monies are used, whether it reaches the target, whether it uses the purpose for which it's being transferred. That's the one question. The second thing I want to say is that I'm very happy to see that the Treasury is looking at the amendments and the detail as to what they want to give us at the Appropriations Committee. But, I get the impression I may be wrong, and I would, just like to hear that when departments do their budgets, they seem to sit and say, last year we spent X amount, we're going to add so much percentage, and instead of starting from a zero base. And what I want to know is, do we use the system of zero-based budgeting at all or not?
No, I'm tempted to request members to take down their questions and we allow the other input, because I heard Mr. Clifton kept on saying the other input will be covered extensively on the other side. Maybe we should allow the input to continue and then take from there. But just take note of those questions that have been raised. Will you continue?
Thanks, Chief Thurston. I wanted to use this opportunity to give the committee a sense of the different kinds of departments that you get at the national level. The only chief director who has a service delivery department at the national level will be the ones that deal with protection services. In other words, what I mean by that is the funds that are voted for correctional services are spent by the National Department of Corrections, and everything can be accounted for by the National Department. If I take, Mahesh will talk a bit about these. Both mine and his are dominated by transfers, and I just wanted to give the committee a sense. So when you get the Department of Education here, there are a set of questions you need to ask them, because there's a lot of information that won't be present in your monitoring report that they send to us. So just to give you an idea of that, I'm responsible for, it's five departments now, but education is still listed just as education because this is 20809, but I will have basic education and higher education. So when I come and see you the next time, I'll be talking about five. But if I take the Department of Arts and Culture, transfers to public entities, and here they've got quite a number, so all the museums, all the arts councils, a big one like Freedom Park, as well as transfers to provinces, they have a community libraries conditional grant. If you take all the transfers, then you 68% of their total expenditure for 20809 was done via the transfers. In other words, of their budget of 2.1 billion rand, 1.4 billion was transferred to other organizations to do the delivery. So the national department is actually only responsible for 32% themselves. So when you speak to them, that's what they can tell you. And I'll talk a bit later about what this means for the national department to have transfers that are this size. In the Department of Sports and Recreation, okay, this is a particular year, so it won't be like this always, but the transfers to municipalities as well as transfers to provinces using the conditional grant, this is 95% of the department's total expenditure for 20809. So of the 4.9 billion that was appropriated, 4.6 billion is transferred either to a municipality or to a province. Now that one is the 2010 FIFA World Cup conditional grant for building the stadium. So that won't be there forever, so this will change a bit. But if you wanted to ask the Department of Sport what they were doing, they would only be able to tell you about the 5% in the detail that we have. And there's a different place for the conditional grant, and we'll talk a bit about that. So they've got two kinds. One goes to the municipalities where the stadiums are being built, and the other one is the mass participation conditional grant that goes to provinces. Similarly for education, the transfers they make to all the higher education institutions as well as the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, as well as transfers to provinces, they've got three big conditional grants, the National School Nutrition Program, the Further Education and Training Colleges Recapitalization Grant, and the Life Skills Conditional Grant. I can't see the 93%. Okay. I'm going to stir things a little bit out. So that's 93% of education's total expenditure for 20809 is done through transfers. So of the 19.7 billion that was appropriated, 18.4 billion was made in transfers. The Department of Labor, in a similar position, their transfers to their public entities, and they've got quite a few, some difficult customers here, also the CETAs, the National Skills Fund, the CCNA, the Umzoomba Youth Fund, which is no longer in existence but was still in existence last year, and MEDLAC and Productivity SA comprises 80.5% of the department's total expenditure. So of the 8.98 billion, 7.23 billion was transferred out. So the center wants the committee and the members to get is that there are a range of national departments. And so when you get to speak to my colleagues and Mr. Mbete about the protection services, even though we do the same thing, and even though the committee will do the same thing on all the departments, you're not dealing with the same animal, so to speak. A department that transfers 93% of their budget is a very different one from a department that spends 100% of their own budget. So to tell you a little bit about the conditional grant.
Sorry, Mr. Prime, if you can, maybe, if it's possible, in your input, to cover some of the questions. And we're interested in the question that was raised about transferring and then things just disappear. You know, there's no monitoring of that. I mean, that question that was if you're able to respond to it, you can in the process of what you cover that question. Mm-hmm.
the specifically was around the municipal infrastructure grant, and so I will cover that in my presentation.
As Robert suggested earlier, the spending on conditional grants, because it happens in the provinces, they each have their own senior monitoring report. That report goes to the NCOP's Finance and Appropriation Committee. And there, for example, last year, Mr. Khalani would call all the NECs for sport to discuss what's going on in the sport conditional grant. And so I'm not sure how this committee will interact with that committee, because sport is not going to, if you ask the Department of Sport, they're not going to bring the 9 NECs with them, but they'll tell you we transfer the money for X. So I just thought I'd give you a few conditional grants so you can get an idea of how the spending is going. In arts and culture, the community library services conditional grant, they transferred 344 million. In other words, on the national department vote, it's spent. Now it's in the provinces. And of that 344 million, only 89.8 was spent. Okay, and the two biggest underspenders were the Northern Cape. They only managed to spend 76.2%, and there they said they had delays in procuring container libraries, for which tenders had to be re-advertised, and the other province was in Mpumalanga. They only spent 78.6%, and that's mainly due to delays in the building of the two of the planned 3 libraries with selected sites were found to be unsuitable. So you can, I put this example up to show the committee that sometimes you can get spending on the national vote. So when Robert reads that the 99% has been spent, you can say, well done. But then when you look at it, if it's a transfer, now this 344 is not looking so good, because under 90% expenditure, Northern Cape under 80%, and Mpumalanga under 80%. Libraries are crucial elements in education and crucial for citizens to improve their knowledge about what is going on in the world. So now I'm not sure how this committee will ask the Department of Arts that question, Chairperson, because that is going to be at the NCOP's Select Committee on Finance and Appropriation. And maybe we need to work out the way in which that happens.
We'll come back to this. I think that it's really for us to come. We'll come back
to this. Okay. So then I've just taken 3 of all the grants. So education, the National School Nutrition Program. This is a huge conditional grant. So 1.9 billion was transferred to the provinces, mainly to ensure that all quintile 1 to 3 primary school learners were fed on all the school days. There was also some money set aside because in this year we are now going to start feeding quintile 1 learners in secondary school. So there was also some money set aside for to start up the program in secondary schools. Provinces spent 83.5% of that 1.9 billion, so there's 300 million that was underspent. And so far as we can tell, the lowest expenditure was in Gauteng and in KZN. And there the underspending was mainly as a result of delays in the procurement of equipment for the rollout of the program to secondary schools. In sport, for the 2010 FIFA World Cup Stadium Development Grant, huge grant as well, 4.3 billion were transferred to the relevant municipalities, I think there's only 10 of them, for the construction and upgrading of the 10 stadiums for the 2010 FIFA World Cup, and 95% of this was spent by the municipalities as by the 31st of March. So that just gives the committee an idea of what happens in one of the transfer elements, which is the conditional grant. I now want to focus on one of the public entities as an example, because the public entities, as Robert was explaining, are also a very different kind of organization, subject to slightly different rules from departments. I've taken Uma Lucy because it captures all the elements that public entities in general would face. So Uma Lucy is the quality assurer in general and further education and training bands of the National Qualifications Framework. So they're the ones who, for example, when the matric exam is being written, they say this matric exam is the quality for that level, grade 12. So that is what basically what they do. The revised National Qualification Framework has given them additional responsibilities, including quality assuring new and existing qualifications and curricula. So here's how they're a little bit different from a department. So they received a grant of $16 million from the Department of Education, so that was in transfer, but they also collect revenue of $27 million, and that's when they do the certification fees. So in terms of 20809, they have a surplus, which means if they were a department, we would say they underspent by $5 million. And the surplus is mainly due to additional income received from certification fees and the investment income of $2.8 million. In other words, they have a separate bank account. They bank their money. They also earn interest on that. They may invest it, hopefully in the right place, not like the seeker who puts their money in the wrong place. But that's what public entities are allowed to do, which is why they're a little bit different from departments. Well, it's a little bit of both. Because remember, when you put the money together, Mr. Sigourney, how do you tell the one apart from the other if you're delivering the service? In terms of the PFMA, Section 53.3 allows public entities to retain their surpluses with Treasury approval. So what they would have done would have been applied to the Treasury to say, we've accumulated the surplus and we'd like to retain it. The basic condition is that the accumulated funds can be spent on items that are within the public entity's mandate. So they've accumulated surpluses over a long period of time. So last year's was $5 million. They've had surpluses of $20 million. So up to the end of March, the accumulated surplus was $25 million, which they have permission to keep. And how were they going to spend it? So they intended to use $21 million of the surplus to fund the additional responsibilities that I spoke about in the beginning. They're going to use $2.5 million for the adult matric project, and I explain what that is. And the balance of $1.5 million will be used to cover the cash flow requirement, to ensure that cash flow requirements are met when the revenue collected in a month is insufficient to cover the expenses for that month. So I chose this public entity to show the members just they are a little bit more complex elements in a public entity than just meets the eye like in a department. As Robert explains, they also don't use the basic accounting system, so I can't go into the account in the same way as I can go into the Department of Education's account. And all of this makes for monitoring you need to understand your department in order to do effective monitoring. So the kind of issues around spending that I want to raise in the section that I deal with, as you can see, each of the ministries with a significant number of public entities. For example, Arts and Culture has got 27 public entities that report to the Minister of Arts and Culture. which is quite a large number. So you can either look at it as a number, or you can say if you have a public entity with a substantial budget. So the Umalusi is not a large budget, but doing quite significant work. But you could have an entity like, not in one of my departments, but in social development. The Minister of Social Development has SASSA, the South African Social Security Agency, and their budget is over 90 billion. So even though they've only got, I think that minister only has three entities, one of the entities has a huge budget. And here we are suggesting to departments that either if you have a number of entities or an entity with a very large budget, there should be a unit that conducts the oversight and support function of these public entities on behalf of the minister. Similarly, for conditional grants, and for my department, we have tried to help them here. Each department should have dedicated personnel to undertake the functions as specified in the Division of Revenue Act for the transferring accounting officer of any conditional grant. And I mean, I'll just read you one line from the DORA, what the transferring national officer must do. A national transferring officer must certify to the National Treasury that the allocation frameworks, including the conditions and monitoring provisions, are reasonable and do not impose an undue administrative burden on receiving provincial departments and municipalities beyond the provision of standard management information. That monitoring provisions are compatible and integrated with and do not duplicate other relevant and related national, provincial, and local systems. In other words, if you've got a conditional grant, the document says very detailed, if you're the transferring national department, what are your responsibilities? And we suggested to all our departments that have conditional grants, you must appoint a person, their sole job is to help the minister focus on the conditional grant. Where ministries and departments see underspending by public entities and on conditional grants, the PFMA is very clear. They are entitled to withhold the following transfer tranche until spending improves using the rules in the PFMA and the DORA. Now, sometimes it's not always easy, because you may ask me in the library's conditional grant if two provinces spent less than 80%, why didn't the national department withhold the last transfer? But I think one works a bit on trust. So if you ask the province, show me that you are going to be able to spend, and they say yes, they are, your inclination is to rather transfer the money than withhold it. But you did see Robert raise the Department of Agriculture, who did withhold their transfer because they knew that wasn't going to be spent. Other big issues for departments, not only in my section, but maybe in some of the other chief director sections, is the tracking of vacancy rates.
I'm sorry, Mr. Prem. I would really like you, I mean, the information that you're giving us is important. But if you could just try to explain it.
Okay.
Yeah, so that we could have more time to engage.
So the one item that we've also asked departments to focus on is to track their vacancy rates, and we're making a suggestion. If they are really large, and maybe 20% is just it's not a scientific figure, we say to departments, if you are unable to fill these, then please abolish the non-essential posts, because otherwise you will continue to be underspending on compensation. Generally, when underspending occurs, it's because departments underestimate the time it takes to hire more personnel, they underestimate the time it takes to run a tender procedure, and they underestimate the time it takes to plan a capital project. and this also affects the ability to spend as well as the quality of any spending. Going forward, there are going to be spending pressures on the new departments. So the restructuring of the Department of Education into basic education and higher education and training, as well as the transfers of the seats and related functions from the Department of Labor to the Department of Higher Education and Training, is going to put some pressure on that budget, because you need to create the new ministry as well as accommodation. In terms of the NSNP, the nutrition program, there will be more learners in terms of the rollout to secondary schools, and there may be a possible increase in the number of needy learners given the current recession, and as well as increases in the cost of food. So there might be pressure on that budget. On the higher education subsidy and the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, here, as the institutions increase their student intake, more poor learners may require financial assistance. And then in terms of the Department of Labor on the employment services system, with the recession increasing the number of work seekers, there may be pressure on that service in the labor center. So these are the kinds of areas that we will be focusing on in the 209 of 10 budget. Thanks.
Thank you for the honor of addressing this committee. I'm going to deal with a number of departments as briefly as possible. My introductory slide starts with the Department of Transport. I just thought it would be useful for you to look at the underspending, overspending, as well as spending pressures going forward in relation to existing budgets. So the first slide of each department, I've just put in a little table showing what the budgets were from 2005, 06, 07, which are the audited outcomes. 2008-09 is the adjusted appropriation, and 9-10 to 11-12 is the 2009 MTEF period, which was budgeted for in February. So you can see the Department of Transport has a kind of trajectory that almost triples in 6 years. That kink you see midway is mainly due to Gautrain and which actually levels off going forward and then because it's a discrete project. This department is also characterized mainly by transfers, the main transfers being, to roads, rail, Caltrain project, bus subsidies, taxis, etc. So most of the department's expenditure is on transfer to public entities, agencies, etc. Just on the spending trends, Program 6 over expenditure, 840.8 million on bus subsidies due to the legal action taken against the department on the payment of bus subsidies. They feel they had restricted the scope to address over expenditure due to the problem arising only in the fourth quarter, and a large amount of funds specifically and exclusively earmarked in the department. To prevent the situation from arising again in the future, National Treasury has created a supplementary schedule for grant to provinces, because what had actually happened was that the department allocates from its baseline bus subsidies, but provinces were contracting and entering into contracts with operators beyond what was the total allocation available. I think in terms of Section 38(2) of the PFMA, it says an accounting officer may not commit a department, trading entity, or constitutional institution to any liability for which money has not been appropriated. So in effect, what was happening is that contracts were being entered into beyond the available appropriated, or what U.S. Parliament had appropriated. So in effect, it's unauthorized expenditure, which Parliament would have to deal with. Program 3, Transport Regulation and Accident and Incident Investigation, there was a slight over-expenditure there, mainly due to an aviation conference. Program 1, under-expenditure, small amount there, due to delays in procurement. Program 2, under-expenditure, also small amount. This has become systemic due to vacancy rates and employment of appointment of consultants has repeatedly been delayed. Next slide, please. Here again, program 5, you see transport logistics and corridor development and the expenditures there, small amounts. Program 7, also small amounts in terms of the Road Accident Fund Amendment Act. I think the details of these things are listed out in the actual schedule, and we can actually discuss them as we go along. Program 4, Integrated Planning and Inter-Sphere Coordination, with much larger underspending there, basically due to delays in signing MOUs with Prasa for the 2010 World Cup transport arrangements, and 250 million on the PTIS grant, which is a public transport and infrastructure systems grant. This is a grant to municipalities to develop public transport infrastructure for the 2010 World Cup and beyond, to leave a lasting legacy in transport in our cities. Much of the funding for bus rapid transit systems, etc., are within this grant. It was basically Shwane, which had not progressed on its initial plans to provide a bus rapid transit system, and so there was underspending there. So overall, the department overexpended by 325 million, this was made the large overspending of 840 million due to bus subsidies was compensated, if you want to use that word, by under expenditure in public transport infrastructure grant, as well as PRASA, which is the passenger rail agency, previously known as the SARCC. Some of the spending pressures basically calls for increased public transport subsidies, which include taxis. These are on an existing poorly defined subsidy system. Much of the pressures arise because the subsidy system that the department has devised is based on a number of passengers rather than a kilometer based type of system. One is aware that a subsidy is not intended necessarily to cover everybody's expenses. It is basically to assist the poor as such. A subsidy system based on number of passengers is always going to increase as more people enter into buses and taxis and trains, etc. And what it does is it reduces the ability of the state to actually use more funds to create a better system as such. So whilst a transport operator's cost doesn't increase if the bus gets more full, it may increase marginally, we are now forced to pay per passenger much higher rates. So it's basically becomes profit in the hands of the operators, and it continues a legacy of conflict in the system, where taxis, buses, etc., chase after passengers rather than get paid a fixed sum on a fixed route, and the authority collects the fares. The system that exists, for example, in rail is very different. They get a fixed subsidy. What they collect in fares then makes up for the rest of their requirements. Okay, other pressures, let me not get into details because I think we would address this during question time. New systems in public transport, for example, bus rapid transit systems. There are other pressures relating to more rail infrastructure extension projects like Moloto Rail. So there's the large project element to spending pressures. Improving our aging rail fleet, purway stations and signaling systems, increasing road deterioration and congestion and damage due to trucking, for example, our coal haulage routes, road accident fund pressures due to slow change in the system towards defined benefit system. Can I move on to housing? Here again, you can see the housing grant has more than tripled or is more than tripling over the six-year period from about 5 billion to 18 billion a year. So over the MTEF period, this year, next year, and the following year, there's already 48 billion rands budgeted. Housing is also characterized by one large grant. It's a human settlements grant, and most of the budget is on that. They're underspent by a very small amount. For the first time, I've seen that every province had 100% expenditure besides the one that spent a bit more. That was Mpumalanga. And I think that's worth further investigation. I've never seen every single province being able to record 100% expenditure. The problem with it is also that the number of houses that have actually been delivered hasn't significantly increased year on year, and this is why I wonder about it. I think what makes it even more difficult is that over the past few years, the housing department and ministry in particular have made it very difficult to know exactly how many people got keys in their hands, and the measure has always been houses under construction and completed. So one never knows whether, you know, 50% of the houses have got one layer of brick only, and the other 50% are completely finished or somewhere in between foundation and roof level. So you never know exactly how many houses we have delivered to our people in terms of keys handed over. So this is why when you see 100% expenditure of every province, we have to ask ourselves what exactly has been delivered for this 100% expenditure. Okay, some spending pressures we still need. There's a backlog of, I think, 1.8 million homes. We need more houses. People are calling for larger houses, although people who have received houses before have, in many cases, ransacked houses that are being built because they feel it's unfair that other people are getting larger houses now, etc. There's non-alignment with MIG and refusal to include township establishment infrastructure in the housing grant. The housing grant used to be was used in a way in which you had to establish the township and build the house, the top structure as it is called, from the same grant. A year or two ago, there was a ministerial edict, if I can call it that, that the housing grant will no more be used for building the road, putting in the water pipelines, the electricity cables, etc., and they are only going to build top structures. So this has put pressure on MIG as well. What makes it difficult is that MIG goes to municipalities, housing grant goes to provinces, and then the coordination between actually building the top structure and getting the township services in place is, you know, there's a breakdown in that kind of communication. Some of that has happened in the Gateway project. Formation of the Housing Development Agency, there are still no clear operating rules as to how much of land they will buy and hold, who will pay for that, whether most of the human settlement grant goes to provinces, will the provinces pay the agency for each time they hold the land, must we carve up the grant into part for land, part for top structures, etc. And so the funding model on that is not too clear. There is a push for more nationally led projects rather than accreditation of capable municipalities. I personally feel that it makes it difficult for that kind of coordination of services. We end up with fights between mayors and ministers about, what they would provide, etc. And that tends to slow down delivery. Okay, Dwarf. Okay, here you're seeing also an almost tripling of budget, or the budget almost triples to an outcome, I think, over 6 years. This department is one which is also a policy department. It does planning as well on water resources and water services, but also has a number of different structures in terms of funding. It has its own trading entity. It collects charges on raw water. There are a number of water boards which have derived their ability to spend on infrastructure from borrowings as well as payments by municipalities and other water users. So this sector as well has both external and internal funding. What we're seeing here is the funding from the fiscus. Okay, the under expenditure, the Dehoop Dam construction. Let me say this. There are two ways in which dams are being built in South Africa. One is South Africa, or for South Africa, through the TCTA, the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority, which borrows and then on a project finance basis has done many projects. The Berg River Dam here in the Western Cape is one such project that was done on the auspices of the TCTA. The TCTA does report to the Minister of Water, Affairs and Forestry, or change now. The Lesotho Highlands project was also undertaken by the TCTA and provides sustainability to Gauteng. The other way of doing this is that the DWAF has its own team that undertakes its own construction within the department. Now, the Dehoop Dam is one of those projects which is being done in-house by DWAF as opposed to contracted out by the TCTA and financed by them. Okay, so the Dehoop Dam, there were more earthworks than anticipated, higher stream flow than expected, making it difficult to work, inability to attract and retain experienced staff, and underdeveloped part. All dams are usually in some remote area anyway. Lengthy procurement process, poor service, maintenance support from plant companies. These are reasons given by the department. There's the Dehoop Dam social component. It supplies bulk water from the dam once it is constructed, treats it, and sends it to areas that don't have water, like Sifukuni, etc., and then provides that the water for which that service delivery can occur by the municipality. So this is also slow progress because there's overall, it depends on the overall dam construction. Program 3, water services, over expenditure relates to late submission of invoices, etc.
what forestry also there's over expenditure. I think you're getting detailed it out as Pakisa World in your main schedule, and so these are service providers for transport services, etc. Next slide is spending pressures. There is a need for more dams. There's a huge water sector leadership group that the department is consulting across the sector on our overall water resource requirements. There are a number of dams that are being looked at the moment, like Spring Grove Dam, etc., in the Natal Midlands. So I've already heard presentations of around 37 billion being required. So these are looking at climate change, etc., and our own security of water supply in the country based on our growth trends, as well as the need to address or to give water to people that never had it. Now, a lot of these things are actually being held back, not by the fact that we can't put in little pipes and street connections, but there aren't the water resources to supply it with the water. The same goes for electricity, but we'll come back to that. So there is a need for more bulk pipelines and treatment facilities in order to enable local recirculation and connection to unserviced households. There's a need for rehabilitation to address the wide-scale leakage and wastage that is happening in our pipelines, eradication of schools and clinics backlogs for water and sanitation, and the general sanitation backlogs. I know there are some areas in the Free State where who ask for waterborne sanitation to actually eradicate the bucket system. Pipes have been put in, but no one can use those toilets because there is no water for waterborne sanitation. If you don't address the bulk part of it, the bulk systems, you can put in the connections, but there won't be the water for it to work. Okay, DPLG, here again, this is the budget pattern. You can see it's still generally upward. It also more or less triples in 6 years. It is 126 billion over the 2009 MTE. So those years, it is mainly made up by transfers to local government. The municipal infrastructure grant is one of the largest, but there's equitable share, there's three basic services, there are capacity grants, etc., all built in within this report. All of the details are in the ENE, the Estimates of National Expenditure, which is the thick book. I'm sure most members would have gone through that. Okay, here again, there was over expenditure in Program 1 administration due to new staff appointments and ministries in provinces and the national department. However, this is not very big. 287 million was withheld from non-performing municipalities. Spending pressures. There is a need to address small municipalities or smaller municipalities, many of which may be unviable from a large project perspective. If you're not able to attract municipal rates in a small area, it's very difficult to build large projects. If you need a reservoir, a road, street lighting, etc., it is difficult for some of these smaller municipalities, the one-horse towns, as I call them, to actually raise the kind of finance. So I think the MIG formula-based approach to MIG needs to be reviewed and needs to see where the problems are and what to address. It cannot be that the bigger you are as a municipality, the more you should get. Although the MIG allocation is large, the ability to plan and deliver in a coordinated and efficient way needs improvement and oversight. That may itself become spending pressure. MIG needs better targeting and alignment with housing delivery. We almost there. I think the last two. Minerals and energy. Here again, you can see we've basically more than doubled in, or we've more than doubling over in around 6 years. Some underspending. not significantly large. There is a problem with the INEP grant, which is Integrated National Electrification Program, mainly due to delays in service agreements. Savings are realized from vacancy rates due to high staff turnover, delays in capital asset payments and transfers to other entities. The lack of spending on the non-grid electrification allocations. These are mainly solar projects in rural areas which are far away from the grid, and it's very expensive to run long lines to connect them to the transmission line system. But there are definitely delays there on the contracting of service providers. I believe a member of staff has been suspended in this regard as well. Some of the spending pressures, National Electrification INEP grant pressures, due to the need for that kind of bulk infrastructure similar to water, but this is now in electricity, you need substations and bulk connector infrastructure in order to actually get service delivery to households. I think what the situation has arisen that over the last 15 odd years, we have picked the low-hanging fruits. So the ones that we have been able to make easy connections to, we have made. The problem now is to get the bulk systems in place so that connections are possible, both on electricity, water, sanitation, etc. Then there's the issue of the overall power shortage, from a generation point of view, and Eskom's financing pressures on the large bill program that they have chosen within a lowest price environment in the world. So it's not easy for an entity that derives its money from users in a very low price environment. I mean, we are the lowest price electricity in the world. To actually increase those prices at a rate in which allows you to add in more supply compared to the very, very cheap power stations we built a very long time ago, prices have changed. So there are pressures from there. Okay. Push for energy efficiency and demand-side management to be paid by taxpayers. Everyone is saying this, rather than electricity users. That would become a pressure as such. Demand-side management, I believe, is a conservation charge. Each one of us here that saves electricity allows another one to use more, because at any point the generation capacity is fixed before the next one is built, and then there's a huge step up. So demand-side management means that basically if you use less, I am allowed to use more. Therefore, it should be a charge to users, not to taxpayers. Because at the end of the day, the large users like companies and firms are in effect paying only a third of the taxes that we collect in this country, but use about 90% or 85% of the electricity, whereas you and I as householders use between 15 and 17% in the winter peak when we have our electric blankets and heaters on. So it means it's an unfair cross-subsidy if small users who pay the bulk of our taxes through income tax and VAT are actually paying a demand-side charge to the large users of electricity. But in any case, there are calls for this thing that the fiscus must fund demand-side management, etc., and we have put down, I think, in Minister Manuel's speech previous year, $2 billion. He announced a further $1 billion in this financial year, but we still believe that it should be part of the price. At the end of the day, a large company can use a lot of electricity but not make a profit and therefore not pay company tax. All right. Possible EDI restructuring, the whole RES issue could cause a pressure itself. Support for IPPs, independent power producers, possible nuclear generation requirements also would be a pressure. think the last department is the Department of Communications that I'm dealing with. Here you can see that, you know, the allocations double in about 6 years and trend downwards. I think the middle year is the large amount that Parliament voted for Fentech in a special adjustment to provide for universal access and extension to of telecom services to households, as well as the whole dual illumination period on the digitization actually peters out over the years, and you know, the digitization then causes that heightened bars in the middle and lowering towards the end. So communications underspent by a small amount on the compared to the 6.6 billion of the MTF, gives you a sense of where they are. 1.1 million savings realized, another 1.8 million savings realized from the devolution of public works funds from the emergency call centers. Some big spending pressures here, the SABC and its sustainability problems, the television digitization and dual illumination period, possible set-top box subsidies may be required for people to receive the digital signal on their existing analog television sets. It requires set-top boxes. We have yet to see the actual specification of the set-top boxes and what they will actually end up costing the users. 68% of South African households have televisions at this point. Universal ICT access infrastructure and undersea telecommunication cables, these are some of the areas of spending pressures that we may face in the future. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. That's my last slide. Thank you so much. You covered. Okay, colleagues, we have just a little over an hour to engage. Now it's over to you. I don't know if Honorable Swap, you have done with your questions.
Yeah, that will be kind, Chair, but, you know, after listening to this presentation, I realize that we know nothing. And we need to know something, and specifically towards the end of the year, we would actually have to engage with each and every department and know exactly what's going on, because we you know, we don't even start like knowing about what goes on, you know, with transfers to local authorities and this kind of thing. So, you know, I don't know how we're going to do it, but it seems to me that we're going to have to see each and every department and with Treasury and get the kind of information the gentleman and the lady gave us this morning. Thank you, Chair. First and foremost, thank you very much for the submissions. It was very interesting. But, Chairman, you know, I think this year is still fine, but next year we'll really have to bear the consequences of this recession. I think if you listen to the Minister of Finance, and says that the lack of revenue for the state coffers. And Chairman, I think two of the speakers have mentioned that most of the expenses of departments travel within the 6 years. Whether we'll be able to satisfy those particular needs remains to be seen, especially under the present sort of recession that we're experiencing. So I think next year will be fairly challenging to all state departments and to this particular committee. That's my only comment, Chairman. Then there's something else about nuclear. I think the last speaker most investigated nuclear possibilities and so forth. But Chairman, has that been shelved, or is the nuclear program still going on? I think it's been shelved for the time being. I'm not so sure, but
just take down your all the questions, then you will respond. Okay. Can I start? Honorable Coroner.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe it's a very stupid question, but We have dealt, yeah, they ask you sometimes are very stupid questions, but we have dealt now with the past.
Yeah.
Now my problem is, what is going on as we sit here in the department? And you know, if we really want to make an impact in terms of appropriations, we must be able to say this department is not going to spend their money, so we move it to that department so that we do get value for money. And my problem is, when do we get that information if we really would like to see a proper appropriation? You know, about the past, you can say, is this pattern continues this year, and ask questions on that. But, you know, if they rectify it, and the one who was correctly did it last year, and this year they're not spending the money with how they should spend it. Now, are we going to get some sort of information with regard to that, or will it be on past performance we're going to ask questions?
Mm-hmm. If I'm sure further will respond to that, but I think as a committee, I want it to, you're saying it's past performance, and I just want to compare ourselves with COPPA. COPPA only comes when the annual reports are produced, and we're looking at quarterly reports. In other words, we're trying to at least to ensure that we keep abreast with the development. That's why earlier I raised the question of are these reports released in time so that we can be able to see. I know PFMA, I think it talks about 15, 22 days after the end of the month, which must go to Treasury, and from there, the process, when do they reach us, so that we can be able to keep abreast with the development. We can be able to raise the issue that you're raising, whether there's going to be under expenditure, over expenditure, or there's quality in terms of look at those kind of things. But I think that unfortunately we can only monitor once people have spent. We're not going to be part of the department. I see Mr. Sapp, hands that have been raised, but I wanted to, I mean, I've noted.
No, I just want to add on this matter, yes, please, Chair. You know, unfortunately, we don't know what to do in future and how to act in future if we don't know what the past is. So we need the past to be able to determine, to say to a department, you didn't spend last year in this field or doing this or doing that. So, you know, we want to see that you cut, because in the recession that we're heading for, you know, we need maybe to tell departments that you can't have this money anymore. Like the example used of more than 20% vacancies, if we see that the Department of Transport has got 40% vacancies, you know, we must tell them, sorry, you cut 20% of your salary bill, so that we know this for the future, because you will never be able to fill 40% of your vacancies.
Thank you very much. I just want to add two things. One is we're dealing now with the fourth quarter. And I think that one thing that maybe members should keep at the back of their mind is going to the first quarter. What is going to be the link? Because if you look at this report, you'll find that the expenditure on the first quarter balloons. People want to spend the money, want to get rid of those money that have been allocated so that they come to the first quarter. But we're dealing with MTS. Our understanding is that there should be, as soon as what we call a continuation, up to the first quarter, right through, because people are aware upfront when in 2 years' time that this is how they are going to, I mean, their needs. And the Madam Dupreine referred us to the Division of Revenue. The Division of Revenue makes provision in terms of from when should departments begin to be planning. But you still find that in the report, tenders were not concluded in time, there were these delays. And you wonder, how does these things happen?
do we take into account what the division of revenue, for instance, requires of us to do? But I think that those are the questions that we really have to engage with the department. I have a question for the National Treasury. Mama Ngobo?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not familiar with the committee, so do excuse whatever question that I ask. To follow up on Honorable Swart's question around municipalities, maybe can Treasury tell us that if there isn't enough information nationally around municipalities, what information is there from provincial and local government around addressing the question that was put forward? And then also from Treasury, we've got quite a lot of understanding what happens to the surplus that should have been spent but not overspent. What does Treasury do in that instance? And then overspending, where Treasury was also asking itself, how did it come about that there was overspending, particularly in housing, where there's been overspending? Maybe then this rests with the committee, I'm not sure, to say there was overspending, but what was it value for money? What quality that overspending was for? I mean, what quality? In particular, housing. We're building houses, and those houses have got cracks and whatever have you. Is that quality housing? So maybe as a committee we should look into that, or maybe also Treasury can make more inquiry into that one, because they give the money to the department.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam. You're not asking like someone who started this morning. But it's clear that even between us, we need to have coordination between the improve our coordination between other committees and ourselves, so that they can have the benefit of these reports and public hearing that we'll be having with the department. My good.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Even myself is for the first day I come in here. So if the questions are not, I'll start with basic questions that might make me follow what's happening in here. The process of allocating or appropriating budget by Treasury to department, it was said that you go up to a program, you don't go down to sub programs and activities. What powers do you have if you are going to check a program? Does Treasury have the power to say no, this program is not the right one, we won't give you money for this one, go and change your business plan and bring some other? Can Treasury tell a department? If it can, then on what basis does it do that? If it doesn't, then it means they are simply dishing out money. That is the basic question that I would like to understand, so that I can be able to ask questions next time. And how do you intend solving that problem of allocating up to a program? Then I still have got a lot more questions. For instance, I was horrified by your slide 22, education and related services. The understanding by Gauteng and KZN. So if 22, if that is the case, and the allocation was to feed the learners, so it means those learners that should have been fed were not fed. Is that what it means?
And one other question is, you are suggesting that each ministry must have that has got a significant number of public enterprises, of public entities, should have a unit that conducts oversight. What is the case now? And is it advisable? Because the unit in the department will be reporting to the department. And is it advisable to have a unit within the department that will be doing that? Because if they are afraid of the minister, then they will just write a nice report, afraid of being fired. You said something about refusal to include township establishment infrastructure in housing grant. If that could be unpacked for me, I missed that. I didn't understand what exactly that means. And then you keep on saying that in almost all the departments where there's the underspending, you say there are delays in contracting service providers. So the way it is, it's a normal thing. You said it almost in every department that has got underspending. This is, so it means it's normal. Every department just says that. And what we intend doing about it? Because seemingly that is the easiest route. We will definitely have people in between jobs. But if each and every department is going to say the same thing, either it's vacancies or it's they are late in. Why are they always late? If it's a normal thing, why don't they correct it? Why does every department have a problem in their procurement? I think that would be that. I hope the questions make sense. The first time I ask questions, anyway. Thank you. I think that the Treasury is here. They will respond to those questions that they are supposed to respond to. They will tell us those questions that they think that the department will be best suitable to respond to. Mama Shiko, come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question from the education sector. I think we've been having this issue of libraries for a long time. And really it affects, because what we should have in mind is that we need to empower our children. Without libraries and the issue that has been on for such a long time, I wonder what the role, I think the week has already covered the role, because I think there are some interventions that the department can, that the National Treasury can do. Because if we have issues for so long that we resurface whenever we get our quarterly reports, you ask ourselves that how long will it continue? And it's also the National Treasury is able to restrain some funds. It's an example that came from Nelusi. It's a public entity. But I think there's something that you can, for the mere fact that the presenter mentioned that some funds can be restrained, even if it's a public entity. I think to some extent you should tell us how far has you tried to interrogate their surplus. Because I think that is possible, because it's a public entity. that has to do with you. And you mentioned somewhere that National Treasury has the ability to restrain the usage of the money, utilization of that money. And your procurement policies must come out clear here in your response. Are there clear procurement policies where we should know that you are in a position to hold these people who use this money accountable? And if we could get, maybe this briefing can come from Water Asset, from Dwarf, because the Dihob is a very good project, because it's going to say at the end of the day, the people in rural areas and the mostly disadvantaged people will benefit from this project. But you are, there's no clarity on the other aspects of this dam, the social. If we could, I don't know whether the briefing will come from you or from the department, but the background we can have when we are going to meet those assets will really assist us a lot. And I wasn't happy about, because you gave us a document, and this document, as maybe this falls within the first quarter, where the international liaison events. You said the variance is due to funds that were not recovered from the Department of Foreign Affairs as their contribution for ICAI as a hospitality center at the 2008 Beijing Olympic Games. Does it fall within the fourth quarter? And if it does, what did you do if the money could not be recovered? And with correctional services, your report, I wish it could have been separate as well, so that we can interrogate, we can be more informed about correctional services and its non-standing, and what did you do when, because what was your response when the correctional services does this, the overtime, I wrote something, the overtime with the correctional services, it has been going on and on and on and on, and I think they have measures in which to address this issue of overtime with their water. And as it is, and I hope you also explain well, because public Department of Transport underspent in all those other programs except the one which, where they overspent with bus subsidies and legal costs, but there was dire underspending in most of their programs. So I don't know whether we should call it overspending, because there was this mismanagement and misplanning that caused the overspending, whereas generally there's underspending in the Department of Transport. Thank you. Chata.
Thank you very much, Comrade Mashego. I also want to thank Treasury for this extensive input, but also to starting with the process that was set out in terms of monitoring and reporting. I think that it's a process that will be very important for us. Once there is a clear document, maybe we need to get together just get to and be workshopped. Because your function of doing some oversight and ours, we're almost complementing one another. So it will be very important. It would really assist us in terms of ensuring that whether the programs that are being carried out by government are really in line with the strategic plans and those kind of things. But I think that maybe we'll really need time just to focus on this, and it would assist to arm us. As you hear that many members, not only the new members, we have said that they are new. I mean, even those old ones, sometimes we are overwhelmed by information and finding it difficult to get the right stuff. I mean, people are talking, for instance, quality of the service delivery. This will be very useful to us. But I think that the main question that members seem to be asking is a question that says, in terms of PFMA, Section 6, 2, for instance, on Chapter 2, it says, to the extent necessary to perform the functions mentioned in Subsection 1, that is, or the function of the National Treasury, National Treasury, D, may assist departments and constitutional institutions in building their capacity for efficient, effective, and transparent financial management. F says, National Treasury must intervene by taking appropriate steps, which may include steps in terms of Section 100 of the Constitution or withholding funds in terms of Section 216(2) of the Constitution to address a serious or persistent material breach of this act by a department, public entity, or constitutional institution. I think that, I mean, for instance, you telling us that you have this public entities where national departments are transfer funds, and then at the end of it, people turn their back on that. I'm not sure if that's what you're telling us. And if it is what you're telling us, we really have a problem with that. But clearly, even as a parliament, I know that as, I mean, the NCOP will go into details because most of the expenditure in Schedule 4, where there are concurrent functions, does do a lot of detailed oversight. But I think that as the National Assembly as well, maybe amongst ourselves as a committee, we need to say, how do we keep track of this expenditure? I mean, a lot of money, year after year, we must improve. I mean, we must approve the budget. Now, we can't approve a budget and then turn back and forget about what's happening. And once, because transfers have been made, we think that now expenditure has been done. If I may take the example of housing, Eastern Cape last year got over R1 billion. You know how much they spent of that? 25%. They only spent 25% maybe around 30%, because they spent about 300 something million of over 1 something billion. Now, the interesting part of that, because you're speaking about every department correctly, Mr. Sakir, having spent over 100%, we found that money has been transferred to other provinces. Northern Cape, for example, got about 100 million on that. In 3 months' time, it has used up the 100 million. We went to Northern Cape to find out. But what we found? Guess what we found? Northern Cape had not spent that money. They had transferred it to municipalities. There was no housing unit that was there as proof of having spent. So everyone is getting money, transferring, but there's no expenditure. So that was what we found while I was at the NCOP. So clearly, transferring it is not enough. We really need to find a way of how to deal with this. The other thing that I really found interesting in what you said, in your input, for instance, was the on monitoring issues of review. In terms of now the money bill amendment, what is it called? Money bills. Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. We have also to produce a report of review, you know, in this committee. Now you're also doing your reviews. I'm saying it's interesting because
like I said earlier, there's complementary work that you're doing in terms, you have a responsibility of oversight as enjoined by the Constitution, by a PFMA. So maybe we'll have to, we'll see those articular reports and perhaps see how can they be of use to us. The other question one that has is the the fund that allocated for 2010 stadium. Now we think that we're almost at the end of the building of the stadium, if I'm correct. Now, does this mean that, for instance, now those resources that have been allocated to 2010 stadium, at least we'll come back to discuss and be redirected, perhaps relieve some kind of stress, not 60 million, not 60 million that the minister is talking about, but at least we can have this 4 billion back and reallocated. Colleagues have raised the issue of this alignment between houses. Thank you very much, Honorable Korenhoff. But you haven't had the response to your question. About water, shortage of water. Well, maybe we'll ask the department, but water. You can deprive a person of any other thing, but water, it's life of a human being. It's clear that we need to deal with this issue of water with the Department of Water Affairs. It's water and environmental affairs. Yeah. And I think that those are perhaps my questions for now, Chairperson. No, thank you very much.
Sorry. Honorable Sir.
I'm sorry, Chair. I wonder, we often hear about bad quality of housing that's being built and that the housing needs repairs. As far as I know, and Tracy can help me in this, the municipality are sitting with millions and millions and millions of rands in the housing reserve funds, which they're not allowed to use. And is there no way in which municipalities can actually start using that money for a repair of houses that were badly built?
And I think that maybe what I want to say up front is the, you will respond to those questions. That you think that they are related to you, but we are raising our frustrations as the committee. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to maybe try and answer Mr. Kornoff's question, even though he left now. And the committee must tell us how you want us to present our information to you. There are 34 national votes. Now we can, the Treasury is divided up into the sections. So maybe if the committee thought that they could accommodate like protection services and education and related services on one day, then myself and Mr. Mbete will come and we'd go department by department detail. And then the next day, Mr. Fakir and Mr. Naidu and Gillian can come and do the admin services. Just in terms of timelines, the department, the end of the month was the 30th of June for the first quarter. They must by the 15th of July, which is next week, they must give us their report, then we have to check whether the numbers are correct, etc., and we argue with them about why. So let's say if you gave us another 2 weeks to sort that out. By the end of July, we can come back, and then you can liaise with our parliamentary officer, and just tell us if you want it like that, because that's how we can do the 34 votes. We can split them up like that. And then you can, you know, I think what happens is you there's a lot of information and you want to ask a lot of questions, and there isn't enough time in the time we have. So that, I mean, that is just a suggestion that I can make.
Maybe just before we move forward, I think that the clearly members are saying it's their first time. It's our first meeting at this committee to sit and get this report. It's the first report that you're presenting to us. We didn't have every information, but we did engage with further in terms of our approach. We think that moving forward, what we're going to do, we're not going to have this report now over one day. Maybe we'll deal with one section a day, and so that we can exhaust these things, because we can't get a report of this magnitude over a day and a thing that we will do justice. No.
Most committees, I'm not sure whether this one would like it, are saying during the committee period, when we come back from the July constituency week or period or whatever, they are going to have something like 2-day workshop or 3-day workshop, depending on what time they have for committees, so that they all begin to engage with departments at various levels for various issues.
I think we'll also follow suit, because we need to understand this issue. But after the National Children's from this side, we'll come up with a suggested program that the committee can look at and get feedback from that. Thank you, Chair. I hope I've captured everything, but let me start with the original question about information at municipality level from DPLG, what used to be DPLG, on MIG, etc. The department does have a huge database of every project that MIG has funded, including the project descriptions, how much they cost, what proportion of it came from MIG, what are the outputs of that project, what would, you know, sought to be built, etc. Where is the project in its different phases? Is it still being designed? Is it being implemented? Has it been completed, etc.? So there is a wealth of information in departmental databases. And all it means is that whatever detail you need on particular areas, particular projects, etc., you need to be able to ask the department, here is, you know, a list of fields that I would like to see on different projects and the progress on different projects. So that is possible. In effect, they also have regular reports on their website, but, you know, high-level reports. But I'm saying that this committee has the ability to tell the department we want detailed information at this level. If I'm not mistaken, the number of projects on that at the moment is somewhere between 6,000 and 9,000 projects across the country. So you can get very detailed project information. For example, housing is supposed to have the same thing. They may give you more information than they would want to give us. So you can get fairly detailed projects on project information from housing, MIG, and other departments. Nuclear, has it been shelved? Let me give a small history on the background to this. In this country, we have a scenario where, because ESCOM is a public entity, both the regulator and the department has allowed them, and the DPE, in fact, has allowed them through legislation to become the single buyer. Now, in most countries, there's a separation between the buyer of electricity, the operator of the grid, and those who generate, because they sell to the grid operator, right? Now, because we have a grid operator and generator in one, it is actually a difficult situation, and this is why many other companies from around the world who would come in with their own financing say that this is an unfair system, because they are being their tenders are being adjudicated by a referee and a player at the same time, which is ESCOM. I believe the department is moving away from this. They are drafting regulations that separate the grid operator or the buyer, and for them to have their own independent law, which makes them independent from a policy point of view and from an interest point of view in ESCOM as a holding company. So nuclear, for example, did actually end up with some bids. I think it was Areva and Westinghouse that actually put in bids, but that process was shelved. The same with IPPs, independent power producers for different types of generation. All of them complain that, okay, we are being adjudicated by both the referee and player. So until that process becomes independent, people will price higher, etc., because of the insecure environment, the policy or regulatory environment is insecure. The problem with nuclear is that it will end up more expensive than a coal-fired power station that we operate. Our prices are the lowest in the world because of this. The choice that ESCOM has to make then, because it is thrust into the situation of then choosing, right, is that it's going to choose prices that are comparable to a coal-fired power station, because it doesn't know whether the regulator will allow them a higher price to absorb the nuclear fuel. So in this way, both the nuclear contracts would have come with their own funding, so the government wouldn't have had to put a cent except to give some kind of a guarantee, right, unlike us giving money to ESCOM so that it enhances their balance sheet. They would have come in with their own funding, but on a higher price per kilowatt hour. So it would have saved probably the situation that we are in now. But ESCOM shelved it, and other players, I would assume. So yes, it seems to have been shelved, but I still see it as a potential that could maybe be resuscitated if ESCOM can't borrow, if the fiscus cannot lend additional billions and billions of support like it did last time. Then it may come back as not a spending pressure, but as a pressure for a guarantee. Well, it's still it doesn't cover it. I hate to say this. I mean, we are really the lowest by far. I think the next highest price in the entire world is Canada or somewhere, but it's at least double our pricing at the moment. In fact, if I got the statistic right in my head, the next highest price per kilowatt hour is about three times more in the world. Let's not open this one. Okay. All right. So we've been used and we've been spoiled. You see, they say the actual regulator between supply and demand is price. And because our price has been low, we then end up with a supply problem. Okay, let's not get into that. Okay. There's a question on whether it's past performance that
this committee and us should be recommending for the future. It's probably a more philosophical question. My view is that you cannot only drive forward when driving a car by looking in the rearview mirror. So you have to keep an eye on the road ahead as well as be able to glance into the past regularly. And this is probably what this committee is doing right now. We're taking a view in a look into the rearview mirror, but we also have to look for the future. For example, the Dewop Dam underspent. Does it mean that, okay, we as Treasury has never taken a punitive view? We didn't say that, okay, you underspent on the work, stop the project, take the money away. Why? Because our people need the water. We do need the project to go ahead. We want them to succeed. So, you know, it's not as easy as saying, stop the project, take the money away because you underspent. All right, I know you're well aware of that. Let me move
I don't think that the question was saying that.
No, but in other areas,
I understood the question to be worried that there is underestimation.
Yes, we are
looking at the reasons which we agreed that maybe Dwarf could be best placed to, to answer this question.
Yes, because absolutely.
I mean, under these circumstances that we live in, and we don't want to just throw away funds when there's such I mean government is under pressure as well to provide sufficient budget. So the question was, I think, was raised in that context that they must spend those resources that are given.
Yes. Okay, but I mean, that's why I say that each one, you have to examine the merits of the case. They say there were geological problems, etc., for example, then if it makes sense, you can't just take away the money. In other cases, it makes sense to just take away the money. So, you know, this is something where each case you'd have to look at the merits on. Let me see, where are we? Overspending in housing and quality issues. Housing with cracks. I think that, you know, this issue is, I mean, we took this up with the department many years ago, is that why when you and I build a house on our own, the NHBRC is always there. It takes its pound of flesh and it makes sure that the contractor is doing the job well. We said to them that we would like every single RTP house to go through the NHBRC process. So that kind of quality control is there at the word go, because we cannot afford this kind of value that the taxpayers are putting in for poor people to just crumble away in a few years. So, you know, I mean, it requires a registration fee of a few hundred rands for each home. NHBRC is actually starting to get into this thing, and some of the provinces are actually getting them involved. But we would like to see every single state-built house to be registered with the NHBRC, and that they should ensure the quality on those. No, that was, I think yours was the last question on that.
Okay
but all right, maybe I should jump there as well. We don't have the authority to be able to see at this point. The National Treasury is getting its local government section now that the MFMA has been passed to be able to get into this. So it's our intergovernmental relations branch people that would be able to know what are in municipal reserves. I think at the level of Julia and I, we deal mainly with national departments, national budgets, but I mean, we can certainly forward this kind of thing to them. How much is sitting in housing reserves? There's the other angle of the problem. It depends on accreditation, because municipalities are not accredited to do their own thing with housing. Yes, I know. We keep telling departments that every time you come to Parliament, you say, that this municipality and that municipality didn't perform, why not allow us to directly appropriate money to those municipalities and they report on what they have performed and on the basis of those funds? But this has been an ongoing battle. Hopefully the committee can do something about that. Okay, so there's two elements to that: the ability to see into reserves and the ability to act on them. We will take up with our intergovernmental relations people that ability to see what is in municipal reserves. I'm just trying to check where we are. Yes, I do hope. Can I just address, maybe Julia will also help me on this, on how National Treasury, there is a view that the National Treasury gives money. we recommend to the Minister and the Minister's Committee on the Budget, Cabinet allocates and Parliament appropriates. In effect, you give the money to departments, not us. It is your appropriation, and every time we come here and we say that a department that has a department that has overspent is unauthorized expenditure, but is it? It is actually unauthorized by you. The PFMA is the Act of Parliament which you pass. The appropriation is your appropriation as Parliament. If they overspent, it was unauthorized expenditure by you. So we make recommendations, Cabinet allocates, you appropriate. You have given this money to departments. Okay. All right. It's not officials. It is our representatives that makes these appropriations. The developed social component. The details of that, I think, is better left to the Department of Water Affairs. But I can say that from the dam itself, there are large pipeline systems that supply. Firstly, the mining area, so there is a mining component that gets supplied with either raw water and some potable water, treated water, for the staff on the mines, and that is priced in separately into the scheme because the mines pay for their pipeline. Right? Then for us to take water to Sikukuni and other areas, we as the fiscus has to pay because we are doing it for poorer people that may not be able to afford that to become part of their water tariff. It will result in a very large price for them if they had to pay through their tariffs for their pipeline. So there is a government grant to for the bulk pipelines as well as the treatment plant that would treat water to them. That would then be supplied to the municipalities in the area. The municipalities then would pay for that water received and charge residents once they have put in the individual pipes that go to people's houses, the reticulation system. But that is the nature of the social component. If you want more details, I'm sure the Department of Water Affairs can give you a complete breakdown. Bus subsidies, overspent whilst there's general underspending in other programs, that is true. The Department of Transport generally underspends in a lot of the programs. I think that kind of detail engagement with them would be fairly necessary. There are a number of programs that just produce strategies, documents, and you know, and some of which have been going on for many years. I think it's worth getting into the details of what is being produced for money. Besides the grants, which, you know, also underspend, for example, the public transport infrastructure grant. It was a grant initiated by the Treasury and then run jointly with
Department of Transport, the Director General insisted that she wants to run the grant on her own and it shouldn't be jointly with the Treasury. So we have allowed them to run the grant. That is the situation there. I think the reallocation of stadium money will bring some relief. In other words, these are discrete projects. They are not an ongoing grant. And therefore, they will, you know, when those are finished, they will actually mean that there would be, that money can be used for something else. To the extent that money is there, because it's still everyone's money. I mean, the same goes with Caltrain, the same goes with other big projects. Once the work dam is finished, you know, that these are all discrete infrastructure projects. You get infrastructure programs like housing, where each house is not considered as a discrete project. It is a program that's ongoing. And the MIG is one of those as well. Julia, you want to take over or have I missed anything? Okay.
Thanks, Mahesh, Chairperson. Let me just talk about the library's grant. The library's grant only started in 07-08, so it was a new grant. We realized the importance of the grant, which is why we recommended funding for it. And this is where I think the committee can ask departments this question, and Mahesh can attest to it. When we recommend to departments, can you please take a little bit of money, then another small bit before you get to the big amount? They will always tell you, no, give us all the money. We can spend it. So that grant went, started with 163 million rand. They complained bitterly that it wasn't enough money. The next year, this past year, it was 344. And you can see that was a big jump for them. What we did as the Treasury, and we don't do this on all the projects, but in particular instances where we can see a department is really struggling, Robert works for that unit in public finance, the technical assistance unit. We arranged for somebody to work in the department to build their capacity to manage this grant. And that's one of the things that departments, when you speak to them, you must ask them, when you ask for a conditional grant, do you realize your responsibilities for the conditional grant? Short of me actually going down there and spending the money myself, Chairperson, we treat our colleagues as colleagues, and we recommend. But they are the accounting officers, and they would need to come and explain to you. Just in terms of, I mean, I know when you read the report, all the reasons for underspending sound more or less the same, but that is the nature of what happens in a department. People underestimate how long it takes to employ somebody. I mean, I will ask the committee if they know how long it takes to employ an additional person in Parliament. From the time that you say you need an extra person to the time that the person arrives. Yeah. So that is why we're saying you can speed up that process. Certainly you can. And for some departments, it's the vacancies are due to slightly different things. In one of the departments I have, the Department of Labor, their vacancies are because the salary level that they want labor inspectors to be at, they will never attract anybody. And so we say to them, well, maybe you need to employ less number, but pay them more. And that's the approach. But now in order to do that, they need to go back to the DPSA, they need to re-job evaluate. In other words, every time you change it, the process takes a little bit longer and longer. We try to that is why we do the quarterly thing. We warn all along. I'm not sure, Mahesh, in all your time at the Treasury, whether you've ever recommended that we take money away from the department. The customers of my department are poor people, and I always think that I shouldn't punish the customers because the department doesn't want to deliver, but I need to apply my pressure on the department. And that's what we do try to do. So it's because what if I make a mistake, chairperson? What if I say, no, we don't believe that you're going to spend this money, and can I now take the money back? And it turns out that they could, and then I would, the appropriation for the adjustment budget already through, and we can't put the money back in there. So it's like it's not an easy decision to say give more money. It's equally not an easy decision to recommend taking money away. And you should know, chairperson, you've sat in the NCLP where the chairperson needs to say, let's take the money away. It's not so, and it's a difficult balance to strike. In terms of the procurement policies, I mean, we have the triple PFA, that's the preferential procurement policy, it's a framework. We ask that public entities develop their procurement policies and departments using that as the overarching legislation. And that's the thing with public entities, they are somewhat autonomous and they report to the minister. So the honourable member asked, why do I suggest that there should be a public entities unit? It's because the public entity doesn't report to the department. It doesn't report to the DG of the department, it reports to the minister. So the minister needs to have somebody that helps him conduct his oversight. And if I can explain it like this, the National Treasury, our public entity is SARS, the Revenue Service. They report directly to the minister. Our DG may talk to them, but he doesn't look into their budget. He doesn't, and in fact, they will tell him in no uncertain terms, excuse me, DG National Treasury, you're the DG for your department, we report to the Minister of Finance. And so technically our minister should have in his office somebody that gives him advice on what the public entity is doing. But I think in a lot of departments that role has not been played in that separate way. And possibly the committee may want to, I mean, we may be able to help you. We can tell you for each vote how many public entities and the amount of money, and then the committee can decide when they call that particular department in, can you please explain how your minister conducts the oversight on your public entities. Yes, we can certainly give you that. Yes, so you know the public entities are also, not all of them are the same kind. So you get the three B's, which are the ESCOMs and the SAA 2.
Yeah. Schedule 2 entities, the SOEs like ESCOM, Transnet, etc. They have shareholder compacts, etc. with ministers, independent boards of governance. 3 B's are also like the Rope Agency, PRASA, etc. Water boards as well, they have the ability to borrow, that kind of thing. So all of these are governed, a different governance arrangement between the minister, shareholder minister and the heads of those boards, and then performance agreements between the boards and the CEOs of the entity, etc. So, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of these and their different governance arrangements.
Just if I may ask, how far are we with the responses? Mr. Clifton is supposed to, is yet to respond to the questions that you covered. Okay. Because I think that we also have a pressure of time. We have a sitting, other people have meetings,
I was just saying that you will appreciate that the museum down in Grahamstown is a very small public entity, but it's governed by the same rules as the Freedom Park. Except, I think, if you're the Department of Arts and Culture and your entities are all over the country, then your oversight, you need to travel to the place to go and see what's happening. And so for some of the departments, it's easier and less easy to conduct their oversight over the public entities. Then I'm not sure how this committee wants to deal with the Schedule 1 ones, those are the constitutional entities. You do know for the time being they kind of attach to departments, but they don't really report, and they tell us that they don't report to the Treasury, they report to Parliament. So the FFC's budget, the Human Rights Commission, all of those ones.
Well, I think that what you will request is that you give us all the entities, you will categorize them in terms of their lines of reporting or not, so that we understand those that in that categorization, we understand those which are supposed to get the responses from your side, because others, we know that other committees other than us also have a responsibility to oversight over them. That's for the purposes of information. And those that perhaps might be difficult to, in some of them, it's difficult for even the department to get a report, accountability in terms of what they are doing. It's a bit worrying for us.
I just want to say that there is a section in the National Treasury, the Assets and Liabilities Division, that does look in far greater detail at SOE management. It's mainly the Schedule 2 and the Schedule 3B entities, which covers most of the fairly big entities in terms of financial management oversight, analysis of corporate plans, as well as annual reports and their financial statements. So there is the assets and liabilities section within the National Treasury for the major ones. If you want more details on particular SOEs, I believe they are here tomorrow to do some sort of briefing on water boards. So there is a unit that does that in the National Treasury.
Just very, very briefly, Chair, just to come back to you and say we can discuss that. After this meeting with yourself and your secretary and your staff, we'll welcome that opportunity. I know that our liaison office has an idea of an orientation or in August for the committee, similar to what some of the other committees are going to be doing. So that would be welcome to talk about, how our engagement can be most effective to your work. I hope that you found this morning's engagement useful. As you can see, we can cover the whole of government in 3 hours, but it's so it has the potential to be very thin, and then you can't really interrogate at least some of the issues. So. But we can balance the detail with the higher level overview in whatever method and format the committee prefers.
It's fine. We appreciate that. I'm sure we'll come back to you. This committee has a backlog of work. We're postponing a meeting tomorrow, Friday, and the whole Avengers team. But I think that at this stage we would like to thank you for coming and responding to questions. Obviously, we do have follow up questions. Unfortunately, I'll suppress my colleagues so that we don't get to those follow up questions. I'm sure we'll engage with departments. In the past, I know that when departments come, someone with
responsible for that section would accompany the department. I hope that that is still going to happen, but we will provide you with the program once it's ready. And thank you again. And to colleagues, thank you very much. We have a sitting at 2.